Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, and it's a freaky Friday today, I'll tell you that. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And unfortunately, my co-host, Cool Mike, is still on the campaign trail. Bless his heart, but he is working, doing everything that we've always said people should get out there to do. Finding a candidate that they strongly believe in and getting behind them. Knocking on those doors, shaking those hands, taking those phone calls. And bless his heart, he's doing that up there for the controller up in Michigan. And it's someone he truly believes in. And he will be back with us after Election Day this November 5th. He should be joining us on the following Friday, 1 week from today on the 8th. But I am honored and very happy to have a special friend and neighbor and fellow BTR host stepping into the breach, Dana Smearman. Good afternoon, Dana.
Well, hello, Annie. How are you?
All right. And how were the trick-or-treaters at your house last night?
We had plenty. They were very, very nice. A lot of young kids last night who got the royal treatment because back in my day, I didn't get pulled around in a wagon to go. But there was a lot of kids getting pulled around. They had a great time. You know, just a lot of fun, actually, Annie. So enjoyed it. And how is Mike? He's working for a candidate. Any word on how his candidate's doing? Are they making progress?
Right now, last I spoke to him a couple days ago, they were neck and neck in the polls.
Great.
And he said they've got a very good chance, and he's hoping to push her right over the top. So far, out of the five candidates that he's gotten behind and actively campaigned for, four have already been elected and have taken office. This is the last one. It's a special election. Let's hope he goes, you know, batting 1,000, 5 for 5. But, you know, what's really funny is last night we only had two groups knock on our door. And I think it's because we didn't do any decorations and there's no light on our front yard. But it's also, you know, it's a long driveway.
Right.
And you can park like about 10 cars in the driveway really easy. And I don't think those kids really wanted to walk the distance. But I bought something like about, you know, almost $10 worth of candy over at Walgreens because it was all on sale. They wanted to get rid of it, so I got all this great stuff. So we
right. Well,
candy.
We had a lot of kids, a lot more than I expected. Of course, as you know, the neighborhood that's behind us here, we could hear all the kids over there. I don't think they were just coming over quite this far last night, but we did get a few, and my wife and I sat out in the driveway. I was dressed as a werewolf last night, so you know, if you saw a werewolf lurking in the neighborhood, it was just me, Annie. Nothing to be afraid of.
Oh man, I should have walked across the street, but I was doing my notes for our great guest today. We'll have Doug Briney joining us in a little bit. But those who do listen to the show know that we've been doing this now for more than a year, probably going on close to 2 years. But we start off each and every show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going to go out to Staff Sergeant Josh Bowden. So as I pull up the music, because, again, I'm sorry, I don't have my usual co-host to sit on the other end and babysit me, but this goes out to Staff Sergeant Josh Bowden. This is posted September 7th this year. Staff Sergeant Josh James Bowden, age 28, of Villa Rica, Georgia, passed away August 31st, 2013, from injuries sustained while serving his country in Afghanistan. Born August 9, 1985, in Lithia Springs, Georgia, Josh graduated in 2003 from Alexander High School. During his high school career, he excelled in soccer, making the varsity team his freshman year, offensive MVP and Coach's Award recipient his sophomore year, and was the team captain his junior and senior years. In addition, during his senior year, he had 202 saves, 10 shutouts, 6 assists from goalkeeper's position, only allowing 1.52 goals per game. In addition, he also made the Sentinels All-County Boys Soccer Team and was named Douglas County Player of the Year in 2003. His love for soccer began at age 10 when he became a member of the DC Force 86, finishing 9 years later as U19 GA Junior A2, undefeated division champions. He earned 2 black belts in karate and was a junior Olympic champion plus a national and international champion. Josh joined the United States Army in 2005 and was currently on his second deployment in Afghanistan, having been previously deployed in 2008. His most recent assignment was the 71st Ordnance Group, EOD, 202nd Ordnance Battalion, EOD, 748th Ordnance Company, EOD, at Fort Carson, Colorado. His awards included the Joint Service Commendation Medal with Valor, Purple Heart, Joint Defense Meritorious Service Medal, NATO Medal, Combat Action Badge, Senior Explosive Ordnance Disposal Badge, Parachutist Badge, and Air Assault Badge. This is from AJC.com, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. A Villa Rica soldier killed in Afghanistan was honored with a procession as his body was returned to Douglas County. Army Staff Sergeant Joshua J. Bowden, 28, died August 31st in Ghazni, Afghanistan, from injuries sustained when enemy forces attacked his unit with small arms fire while on patrol. Bowden arrived at Fulton County's Charlie Brown Field, where he was received by his family. They traveled to the funeral home in Douglasville, accompanied by members of the Patriot Guard. Sunday's route went from Fulton Industrial Boulevard to Mapleton Parkway to Bankhead Highway to Church Street, then to Rose Avenue and the funeral home. The funeral service was held at the Central Baptist Church. That procession traveled from Rose Avenue to Georgia 5 to Kings Highway, then to Central Church Road. People who wanted to show their respect for Bowden lined the route. Bowden is to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Friends remembered him as a talented athlete. He excelled in soccer in high school and was named Douglas County Player of the Year. In karate, he was a junior Olympic champion, as well as a national and international champion. Bowden's former karate instructor, Samantha, recalled Bowden as a smart student who earned his black belt at a young age, who was protective of his sister. You know, boys. So sometimes they're not only openly loving with their family, but he just loved his sister. He took care of her. Bowden, the son of AJC employee Ray Bowden, was assigned to the 242nd Ordnance Battalion. We dedicate this show to all the men and women in service, to those that have served, that are serving, and will serve. We dedicate this song to them, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon, and you can download it from his site for free at toddallen.com. God bless them all.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name,
Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America, and you can download that for free at toddallen.com, or you can find them up on YouTube. You know, I am proud to welcome back for the third time a very special guest, and now I do consider him a friend, an up-and-coming rising star in the music industry, and a great American all around, Doug Briney. Good afternoon, Doug.
Hey, Annie. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, you know, I think I started the BTR craze with you. Do you have your volume up in the back? Because I'm getting a little echo here.
Okay, I'm not sure. I don't have anything up in the background here.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess it's coming from BTR. But I think actually I started the BTR craze here with you coming on a lot of shows. And if I remember correctly, your first appearance was June last year. And I introduced you to BTR, and you know what? Since then, you've taken off. I have that magic touch, I think.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I really do.
You know, we had you on when you had your first album that came out, It's All Country, and that went fantastic on the charts. As a matter of fact, it got you a 2013 Independent Country Music Association Award. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, it did. It, you know, we had a lot of success with that and still enjoying some success with that.
And how's that going, that album? It's still selling like hotcakes?
You know, it is. It's still selling very well at all my live shows. You know, I have that available. I still have it for order on the website, and I do. I've still been selling it. I think I'm down to the last 25 copies.
Oh, that's great. I guess we're going to have to go and press some more out. You know, you're not originally from Alaska, but you lived up in Alaska for a little over two decades. And up there, you had like a little stand, and you were fiddling around with your music. And when I had your agent first contact me, Mike Stover, as a matter of fact, he's a fantastic guy. I think MTS Management has done a wonderful job. But when he first contacted me, I'm going, a country music star from Alaska? And here we are in the 38. We don't think of country in Alaska. You know, you understand?
I do understand, and, you know, that's part of the reason that we're now in Nashville. That's exactly part of the reason that we've made this move here. We did take the music about as far as what I could go in Alaska. There's only so far that you can go from there, and if we were going to make this really, this dream really happen, we needed to be where it's happening, and so we made the move this summer down to Nashville. And moved into this house. We actually live in Old Hickory, and we moved into the house August 1. And, you know, it's going very well.
That's got to be some sort of a culture shock, though, because here you're going from the snowy tundra to nice, sunny weather. How did your family adjust?
You know, we did really well other than about the first 3 or 4 weeks whenever it was very hot here. The first concert I did, overly gross or anything, but the first concert I did was an outdoor festival in Chester County, and I drank 6 20-ounce bottles of water during a two-hour concert, and it wasn't enough. I was dehydrated by the time I got done. I literally emptied water, you know, sweat out of my boots. I dumped them, and there was not a dry piece of clothing anywhere on me,
and it was
terrible. I was miserable. I mean, it really was. You know, I was given everything I had, but it was terrible. You know, my boys have adjusted quite a bit better. They run every single day, at least about 5-6 miles, and then they usually do an evening run about a mile. They're wrestlers, and they're just in great, phenomenal shape. And, you know, the first couple of days that they did it, it was just, you guys are crazy. I mean, we were dying, and they'd come back. You know, they would only do like a half a mile, and they'd come back and just, you know, red in the face and sweating. But they've adjusted pretty well, and, you know, we're making those adjustments. Culturally, it is a different place. But, you know, we were prepared for that. I shared with someone the other day that the one thing that we really were not prepared for, just had not thought about, The bugs and spiders are crazy. We just did not have that in Alaska.
No, it's a little bit too cold. You know, here in South Carolina, we get the ones what we call no-see-ums, and you basically really can't see them, and they just attack you, and you got to walk around with a can of off in your car. You know, that's what we found we had to do.
Well, you know, we had – Alaska has probably the worst population of mosquitoes anywhere. I mean, they really do. And you have a few spiders, but here it's, you know, mosquito. I'd be happy if it was mosquitoes here, but I mean the multiple millions of kinds of bugs and the spiders here. I mean, they range from sizes. You know, I walked outside when we first got here about a week and a half after we were here, and I walked outside my sliding glass door. And I thought I saw a leaf kind of fall right near my shoulder. And I turned and looked at the leaf, and it had legs, and it was crawling down the side of the house. And, I mean, this thing was about the size of a silver dollar. I mean, it was huge. And, so what I did is I got a screwdriver to put up next to it to take a picture of it, you know, just for size comparison. And when I did that, when I put the screw, just as I put the screwdriver thing, that thing jumped and moved, and I jumped backwards. I tried to videotape. I was trying to videotape it to send it to my daughter because she doesn't like spiders either. And this thing, so I decided I was done playing with the stupid thing. I shut the video camera out. I got a big hammer and I smashed the sucker. I was done playing with it. But so that has been the big cultural thing that we were not prepared for at all. We had forgot about bugs, and after 21 years there, we had forgot about the proliferation of bugs and stuff that can survive down in a warmer climate.
Oh, you made my day. You absolutely made my day. Sometimes when we get up in the morning and we go to get the newspaper, and the newspaper thing is all the way down by the curb, you're always walking across a spider web. And how the hell?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. How do you take this web? And it goes like 20 feet across to the next tree. And they do it within minutes. And it's like, oh, God, it's in your hair. It's on your face. It's like, get it off of me.
Yeah, it's everywhere. You know, we park our cars out in the driveway. There's a big, beautiful oak tree right in front of where we park our cars. And, okay, so that thing, and I finally identified it. I think I've identified it correctly because I'm not a bug guy, but I wanted to see what the world this thing was. I think it is a golden orb spider, I think is what it is. And later on, then we were walking through webs, like you said, every morning, and I was like, and then there was another one up in the tree and in that web, so we killed that one. So I've killed four of those things now. Now, if they stay out away from the house and don't spin webs across where we've got to walk, I will leave them alone. But when they invade our space, it's all out war, and I don't care what – they're dead. I'm showing no mercy at all.
Oh, man. Oh, jeez. You just – like I said, you really made my day. You know, one of the things when I was looking at when you're doing your bio, you still have a son that's in the Air Force. God bless him. But you also have a long historical route with the military that goes all the way back. Yeah. You've got to tell us about that.
It does. It goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War. One of my ancestors fought there in the Revolutionary War. And
what happened?
Actually
did we lose Doug? I think
no,
we just
I'm
lost
here.
Sound.
Whoops. Hello.
Doug,
hello.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
We just lost Doug.
I am. I'm here.
Doug, are you still there?
I am here. Yep. Can
yeah,
you hear me?
He's still there, Annie. He's still there.
I'm definitely here.
Hi, Doug. This is Dana Smearman. I'm kind of co-hosting with Annie today. I'm filling in for her normal co-host, Cool Mike. So she must have had a technical problem on the other end there. So we'll just go ahead and kind of continue the conversation. Maybe she can get herself back online. So you were talking about your family's history going back to the Revolutionary War? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And, you know, she wanted to know kind of the story behind that. You know, he led his – there's actually a statue that's erected to him there in the Massachusetts area there. He led his men into battle, and they were being overtaken by the British, so they pulled out. He went back in a couple times to get some of his men out safely. They were being overtaken, and he was shot and killed on his last trip out. And so they erected a statue there to him in his honor. You know,
Wow. Come
fast forward to World War II. On my dad's side, my dad had three brothers and one cousin, and all of them fought in World War II. I just lost my dad's cousin just passed away about 3.5 weeks ago. He was in World War II at the Battle of the Bulge the Army. Earlier this summer, my Uncle Bobby passed away, and he was in the very last mounted cavalry. And was stationed over in the Burma Chinese India Theater. Then my Uncle Donnie served in the European Theater. So World War II on my dad's side, very well represented. And on my mother's side, my grandfather served in World War II, a little place called Attu Island. which is out on the Aleutian chain. And if you know your World War II history or U.S. history very well, you'll know that Attu Island was the only place ever in United States history where we were overtaken by the enemy. And the Japanese held Attu Island for 2 years.
Wow.
And my grandfather served there in the Army as a supply clerk. He was in the second wave that went into Attu, and served as a supply clerk. My dad did serve in the Air Force. He served during the Korea War. Now, my dad didn't have too many bad war stories to tell. Even though it was the height of the Korea War, he got stationed over in Bermuda.
That's a good place to get stationed at, actually. My father served in Korea as well. And,
did he?
He spent some time there. Yes, he did. And so I have affinity for the Korean War vets, actually for all vets. But my dad served with a construction battalion. And so I think he would have much rather been in Bermuda, though, Doug. I have to be honest with you.
Yep.
I think I would, too.
Yeah.
I can apologize. I apologize.
No,
for some reason, my internet connection got dropped, and I was just struggling real fast to get back in. I do apologize, Doug. Sorry about that.
No problem, man. I just kept on talking. It's okay.
No, because you were talking about your family and service. My father had served in World War II, and he was stationed in the occupational troops in Germany. And unfortunately, I only lost him just a few weeks ago. But, you know, thank God we had time to swim with him. But, you know, he was really proud of his service. And, you know, your family, like I said, has a long, long history with the service. And I want to thank you for doing that. And because you have that history, you also work with, what the heck is it called?
Bright Star International.
Right. Bright Star International. And you do a lot with the Wounded Warriors. How is that going with you right now?
You know, it's going real well. We're getting ready to do the showcase and launch party for the brand new project. That's going to be coming up November 11th, and I'm real excited. We're not charging anyone for this event. We're just going to have it downtown here in Nashville on, at the pavilion. But what we are doing is we're requesting a $5 minimum donation at the door. It's a request. They don't have to have it if they don't have it, but it's a $5 requested donation, and all of that goes to veterans charities. And we're you know, anything I can do for vets is just simply not enough. You know, it really isn't. And do have that very strong affinity and very strong passion to support them in whatever it is that I can.
All right, and now I'm leading this into for a specific reason, because your album, I re-listened to it last night, and I absolutely adore it. But you have on there your final cut called "The Unknown Soldier," and it's something. We do a dedication, like you heard, to a fallen hero, but no one ever really says much about the ones that we don't know who they are or where they are. So I want to play your final cut, "The Unknown Soldier," because I think this really hits it on the head. And let me play this. Here we go. Cut 9.
Not really gone, and the
song, The Unknown Soldier by Doug Briney. It's on his newest album called Super Country Cowboy. Now, Doug, they can get that album by two ways, by going to Reverb Nation/Doug Briney or just going to DougBriney.com, correct?
Yeah, you know, the easiest way is DougBriney.com. They can purchase it there. And we're getting ready to do the release. It will be available through iTunes and everything else here coming up on November 5. But right now, the only way to get it is actually through DougBriney.com. They can listen to it on Reverb, but I don't think I have it set up so that they can purchase it from there.
Yeah, because I got all the music through Mike, and I want to thank him for sending it to me so I could upload it on here. But actually, this is the first time you've actually had this played on air. The only time people actually heard it is if they actually got the pre-ordered album or if they had
That's
been
right.
at one of your concerts, right? So I'm
That's exactly right.
Street today.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. Right. This is kind of a debut of sorts.
Yeah. Now, when you do a lot of stuff that you try to do for the wounded soldier, but you've got a personal reason why you do it also, not just the fact that your family has served, but you've got a special friend that you love dearly that you've been trying to help.
Yeah, you know, I do. I've got a very good friend that served in the Iraq War and was in a Humvee and was hit by an RPG. And Kenny Church is his name, and just absolutely love this friend of mine, but he was, you know, to look at him, he looks fine. He looks normal, you know, as normal as Kenny can look. I tease him about that all the time, but he does. He looks normal, but it scrambled a big part of his brain, and he has a lot of cognitive issues, a lot of memory issues, and different things, so he's disabled still fights with vertigo and still fights with a lot of that. It changed his life completely. He's no longer able to serve in the Army, and that was his love. He was a career man. He was going to be there for, he was a lifer. And not able to do that now and not able to hold down any kind of a job, actually. His wife works, and he's at home, takes care of their little one. But he has to have help with that because of the because he never knows when he's going to have one of these seizures and these different things and the vertigo hit. So I do, and then I've got a very good friend that just got back from Afghanistan as well, and he was not wounded there. But just so much appreciation for these men and women who serve our country and they really don't ask anything in return. It's amazing. I have a friend up in Alaska that was Navy SEAL and was blew his knee out. And back when 9/11 happened, he was retired as a Navy SEAL. He had his knee blown out, and he did no longer qualify. But when 9/11 happened, he was so determined that and the review board said, "Man, we just can't have you back unless you can do this." And the doctors are saying there's no way you're going to be able to run the distances and the thing that we need to do. And he says, "You give me 2 months." And I said, "Oh, fine." And in 2 months, he pushed himself to the point that he was now this is a guy that has already done a long time as a SEAL, and he's not a young man. But he pushed himself. He was number one in his class physically. And the reason he did it, he says, "Man, I just can't be here when this was going on over there." And that's the attitude. These guys don't ask a lot in return. They just don't. And so anything we can do to help them is, like I said, it's just not enough.
Yeah, I completely agree because I live here in what's known as the Tri-Command, and Dana happens to be a neighbor of mine, so he knows what I'm talking about when I say this. And he works in the medical industry. We've got the Parris Island Recruit Depot where they train the Marines here. We've got the Marine Corps Air Station, and we've got the Naval Hospital. And, you know, we see these guys every day, and we can never, ever say thanks enough. You know, I sometimes just see them sitting in the bar, and you just walk up to one of the guys and shake their hand and say thank you. A lot of the times these guys moonlight in the restaurants or other businesses, and you know a Marine by their stance and their haircut. And you go, "You're in the Marine. You're over at the air station." "Yes, ma'am." "Thank you, sir. Thank you for all you do." And you just see their eyes light up.
Although I must say, Andy, there is something really comforting about living in a community with an overwhelming Marine populace. It feels kind of safe around here for some reason.
There is a good feeling. You know, in Alaska, we were right next to Fort Rich and Thalmadorf. They actually combined it now. It's called J-Bear, Joint Air Force and Point Richardson J-Bear. There is. It's a nice feeling having all the soldiers around, but, you know, and you're right. You know, just a simple thank you. I actually sang that song Tuesday evening at a show that I did here in Nashville at Daisy Duke's. And after I finished my set, I had a young man come up to me, and he had tears in his eyes, no kidding. And he said, thank you so much for that song. He said, my family's long line of military too. He says, I just got out of the Navy. He says, I've never heard anybody acknowledge Johnny Reb in a song before. And he says that is so cool. He says, I had, you know, relatives that were on that side. And he says, as much as it was a division for our country, they really believed in what they were doing, and they were serving their country as well. And so, you know, it was just an exciting thing to hear that response and to see that response on his face. Whoops. Did I lose you all?
No, I'm still here. I don't know if we lost Annie again. She seems to be having some problems, Doug. I don't know what's going on. We have a platform here on Blog Talk Radio sometimes that has some problems going from time to time. But listening to your song, Doug, it's got that really nice classic kind of country sound that I like. I'm a little more old school in the country, coming from the hills of West Virginia like I do. And so
right.
who were some of the influences on you, Doug, when you started out in this business?
Oh, you know, the earliest influences in my life were, you know, the first album I ever borrowed from my dad because I didn't have my own was Eddie Arnold. The first album I ever purchased was Kenny Rogers' The Gambler album, and I think the first record I ever purchased was a 45, and it was a Kenny Rogers, and I think it was Lady that I had purchased. You know, I know my first concert that I ever went to of any kind was Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers, and that was at Knott's Berry Farm. And so, you know, some of those, for the Alabama, Kenny Rogers, Lee Greenwood, Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers, all those were just real early influences. And I still lean more towards the traditional side as well. I mean, I just do. I'm a huge Ronnie Dunn fan. Chris Young, huge fan of Chris Young. Trace Atkins, of course. And you know, a lot of these guys still have that. Alan Jackson, I mean, George Strait. I could keep going on and on and on. But they also have kind of that traditional roots with that radio edge friendliness, and that's what we're really trying to go after with this album was something that stayed true to who I am as an artist, the traditional sound with a very radio friendly sound.
Yeah, because it seems in some ways. Oh, are you back in?
I think so, but I just ended up going to my backup microphone. Thank God I had the backup set up. It's just that for some reason my web keeps on going down. I love – Verizon said they did an upgrade for me. I think they downgraded me, honestly. Now, Doug, you were talking about your musical influences, and you had a really heart-tender story you told someone once before about you going to a concert and someone asking for a guitar pick.
Yeah, that was the very first concert that I ever went to. That was Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers. It was at Knott's Berry Farm. I don't know my age. I think I was probably somewhere between 10 and 12 years old, sometime right in there. I could probably go back and really figure it out if I got that ambitious. But I know it was the first concert I ever went to, and I was sitting about the third row, center aisle. I mean, I was right on the edge. And about halfway through the concert, he dropped his guitar pick, and it fell down, literally fell through the stage, the slap on the stage, and he couldn't find the pick. And so he just shouted out to the crowd, he says, does anybody have a guitar pick? And I was sitting there, and I had a guitar pick in my pocket. And the funny thing about that, Annie, is I really didn't play guitar at that time. So why I was at Knott's Berry Farm with a guitar pick, I can't tell you, but it was really cool. I said, I do, and I ran up to the stage, I gave him the guitar pick, and he finished out the concert with my guitar pick.
Of course, you never got it back.
I didn't worry about ever getting it back. Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, that's one of the fun things, that when you do go to a live performance, it's something you take back with you, and you remember for your entire life. And that's one of the things I see, that you do a lot of open performances and everything else. I'm trying to see if I had your schedule here just a second ago. You're playing at the Indigo Hotel downtown in Nashville tonight.
They just canceled that on me. They just canceled it today. They had a change in staff and they've some issues going on, so we're delaying the we're having to delay that. I don't have that date. We just had to send that out today. That I got the call this morning that it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, I'm so sorry about that. But you've got another concert going out in Nashville. It's All Geek to Me. I love that title. Where does that title come from?
Say the title of it again.
It's All Geek to Me. That's on November 7th.
Yeah, It's All Geek to Me is actually a podcast that I'm going to be doing for folks, and that is out of Nashville here. But it is a podcast that I'll be doing and sharing some music on there.
All right. And then you're going to be at the Opry Mills Mall on the 9th.
Yes.
And that's in Nashville again. And then you're going to be at the Pavilion on the 11th.
Exactly.
And then that's going to be over in Nashville also. And then on the 20th, you're going to do another talk radio in Salt Lake City.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, we're getting out there. We're really doing a lot of promotion. I'm working right now with some folks down in Oklahoma to get down in Oklahoma right after the first of the year and be doing some touring down through Oklahoma, Arkansas, and then come back up into Alaska and then get that down into Georgia. We're working on that right now and putting that tour together.
All right. Well, I was going to play another song, but unfortunately I've had a hard time getting my internet to come back up. I'm sorry about that. Jeez. But, you know, you had the songs on the album. You didn't write them, but you personally picked them out. You know, what caused you to pick out, you know, these songs? Is it because you thought they would sell right, or are they some other reason?
You know, for me, Annie, song selection is probably the hardest thing in putting an album together. It really is. You know, for It's All Country, that album, I self-produced that one. I listened to over 300 songs to select the 10 that are on that album. On this album, we have 9 songs on there. Originally, we were going to have 10 and actually recorded 10, but once we got the recording back, it just wasn't the right song for me, and it just didn't fit me. So we took that one off the album. But song selection is probably the hardest thing. I look at several things, and I'm so glad I had Michael Stover as my manager on this project, because he listened to I don't know how many songs, and then he forwarded on to me what he felt like would be good, and I think we still listened to a couple hundred songs to narrow it down to this. But the first thing is I just look at the story. I look at what is the storytelling in the song. Is it a story that I'd be proud to tell, that I think I could tell well? I listen to the, obviously, to the melodies. It's something that I would want to hear. Is it a song that I enjoy hearing? I look at sustainability of the song. Is it something that I think is going to get, you know, has a sound that will get radio play and will do well? You look at all those things, for me, I do anyway, and I even try to look 20 years down the road, because I don't want to be a flash-in-the-pan artist. I want to be here for a while, and I want to have a long career. And, you know, 20 years down the road, I want someone to shout out from the crowd, hey, will you play Unknown Soldier? Absolutely. I still love the song, and I want to still be able to do it. So is it a song that I think I can hear myself singing 20 years down the road and still be proud of the song? And so all those things have a piece of it.
All right. Well, I noticed some of the songs have like a different flavor than from your first album. There's like a change I noticed in the way you handled certain songs. You know,
How are your fans reacting to the new sound?
You know, they're loving it. The fan base is actually exploding right now and really enjoying it. The first album, like I said, was very, very traditional in its sound and not as how the I hate using this term, but not as radio friendly. It's bottom line is it is a business, and so you're trying to sell your music, you're trying to sell yourself as an artist, and you have to sell to the largest demographic that you can. And we realized that we were not reaching, or we felt like we were not reaching the full potential. And so we maintained that traditional sound, but we also added that edge to it that would be a little bit more radio-friendly, a little bit more marketable in that regard. And we really paid a lot of attention to what we were hearing from the fans as we kind of introduced the song to them and let them hear just a little, you know, just a teaser to see what they would think. And overall, the response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Great, because I love it, and I'm sorry that I keep trying to get my internet back up. Hopefully I'll have it back up in a second so we can get on with some more of these great songs. You also switched management companies, and did that have a big effect on, you know, this new album?
Well, I'm still with MTS Management Group. I have not switched management.
Oh, I'm sorry, the recording company, yeah.
The label, yeah. It's All Country. The first album was completely self-produced, and it's CMG Records out of Atlanta took over the digital distribution for me on that one. But they didn't have the production capabilities. We were looking for a company that would help produce and help us, you know, as a label and get behind us in that regard. And Tate Records out of Mustang, Oklahoma, just has done a phenomenal job for us. You know, we selected the songs. We spent close to 9 months selecting the songs. In January, we signed a deal with Tate. We sent them all the music. Kind of acoustic tracks. They began working on them and producing the tracks for that, laying down the all the instrumentation and everything else. I got those about 2 weeks before I left and flew down to Oklahoma. Flew down to Oklahoma middle of May and recorded the vocals down there. Then I flew back. They mastered or mixed those a little bit, and then they added the background vocals. I did the mixing and mastering and then turned it over into the publicity department, the marketing department there, where we did the photo shoots, we did all the different things, and putting together the jacket, putting all that together. And then they have a fantastic marketing team that is now taking the ball and running with the marketing on this. And so they have an entire team, and they've been fantastic to work with. You know, CMG has been a blessing with the first album, doing the digital promotion. They've done a great job with that. I still Facebook with Kim and as friendly as I can be and so thankful to her and what they have done. But they just didn't have the facilities and they didn't have the resources to do what we were hoping to do, and Tate did.
Well, I'm glad they did. I'm going to kill this Verizon. I wish I could get everything back on, you know. But your title song, "Super Country Cowboy," what made you pick that and name your album after it?
You know, again, the song selection. I listened to it. It was a song that I felt very connected to. Growing up, my dad did listen to all the traditional country, and that's where I really gravitated. But obviously, that was my real early influence. But at the same time, my mom listened to the pop radio station of the day, and she listened to the Eagles. She listened. I know every single Beach Boys song I think ever recorded because my mom loved the Beach Boys, and she would play them quite a bit. And so, you know, I did have those other influences that were there as well. And, you know, I definitely gravitated more towards the country. That was more my liking. But as I listened to the song, it was a lot like that Trace Atkins song, There's Songs About Me. And it was kind of telling my life story in that song. And then we're looking for a title track. We were looking for a title for the album. We really felt like this encompassed the flavor of the album and really who I am. And so we chose that for the title track.
Yeah, again, now I'm looking at my modem, and my modem's got a red light on it, which means my internet is down. Oh, this is so frustrating. And here I'm supposed to be able to debut your album. I'm supposed to scoop everyone else out. Thank you, Verizon. Listen, when I last talked to you back in July, you were doing a motorcycle tour down the West Coast to promote your first album. Are you thinking about doing the same thing for the new one or maybe even cross-country?
You know, I would love to. Right now, I don't have a motorcycle. I had to sell my motorcycle when we moved down here, and that's one of the things that I really, really, really miss. And I would love to have a motorcycle again and do some touring from there. It was a great trip. I mean, it really was. It was a phenomenal trip. I loved it. And I would love to take off on the bike and do some more touring like that. But like I said, right now I'm really focused on getting out right after the first of the year down to Oklahoma and in that area and working back across Arkansas, possibly a little bit into Texas even. I've got some friends down there that are trying to get some things lined up for me. And so we're working on it. And if anybody out there, if any listeners are out there and they have a motorcycle that they are not using that is roadworthy and they want to dedicate to this cause, I won't turn it down.
I don't blame you. I absolutely don't, because I used to ride, but that was up in New York, and after I broke my foot, I said, nope, that's it. You know, it's a little too crazy riding in the metropolitan area. But
yeah. Every time I see a motorcycle on the road, I really miss it. You know, I rode motorcycles for years, and first time in a long time that I haven't had a bike. So it's first time in a long time that I haven't had one, but I really miss it right now, especially this summer when it was so hot. It would have been so nice just to be on the bike and enjoying that. And even now, the fall here is just beautiful, and it's sunshine outside. It would have been a great day for a ride, but yeah, I'm in my truck.
Well, when you're in the South, one of the things you got to have is a pick-me-up truck.
Oh,
otherwise, you just
definitely. That's right. I definitely have my pick-em-up truck. I definitely have that. It's four-wheel drive and brush guard on the front, big old lights. It was outfitted for Alaska, so it's a very capable truck.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a real big difference, riding the bike up in Alaska compared to riding here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure once you get your bike all set up, you'll have a really great time. Yeah, I wish you luck on that one. I know I have a ton more questions, but, I mean, there's a song that I fell in love with, the one that's The Money, The Gun, The Bible. And while I was listening to that, you know I'm a retired police officer, so, of course, I know exactly where my gun is. And as I was listening to the song, I looked up on the bookcase, and there was my Bible. And the only thing I really don't have is the money. But I love that song.
Yeah, I don't have
song.
The money stashed either. Yeah, you know, it's a fun song, and every song there has personal meaning to it. Each song I selected because I have a personal attachment to the song. And The Money, The Gun, and the Bible really reminds me of a gentleman who. I treated like a grandfather growing up, and as a matter of fact, when my wife and I were married, him and his wife stood up as grandparents at our wedding. Now, we were of no blood relation at all, but they were that close to me. And, you know, when he passed away, I got a few of his knives and some of his hunting jackets and a few things from him, and just learned a lot of life lessons from him. And from Al Brandt, and his wife Irma is still alive. She lives in New York, in Clarence Center, New York. And I talk with her a couple, two, three times a year, and she's doing well, but she's getting up there. She's in her 90s now. But so The Money, The Gun, and the Bible really reminds me of Al Brandt and some of those lessons that he taught me.
You know, it's funny because when I was growing up in New York, we had a family that lived a couple of doors down from us. It was an elderly couple, and their sons took over the business, which was a moving company. And, you know, because they were way up in the years, they were such a sweet couple. And I remember as a kid going over and bringing them cookies and stuff that we made, making sure that they had everything they needed. Even though their sons took care of them, you know, we as kids just enjoyed hanging out, listening to them, listening to the stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, just spending time. And that's something I think a lot of kids today are not doing. You know,
I think they missed out. And they missed out. I tell folks I was surrounded. I grew up surrounded by old men. The one real cover song that's on the brand new project is the Brooks and Dunn song Believe. It really reminds me of Mr. Basham. Every time I sing it, it reminds me of Mr. Basham. Mr. Basham lived down he was a retired machinist from Weatherby Rifles, and he taught me how to weld. He taught me how to do machine work and lathe and milling machine and those type of things. And I did spend a lot of time out on the porch with him listening to stories and stuff. And he was hilarious. He was a great guy. Al Brandt, like I said, reminds me of the money, the gun, and the Bible. To my right, I had Mr. Taggart, and Mr. Taggart was an electronic genius. Him and my dad formed a company called Radco, and Radco is the company that is responsible for the very first tracking system on and lap system on race cars. Mario Andretti was the very first driver to ever use a tracking system, and it tracked the lap speed, and that was invented by Radco, Roger and Doug Incorporated, my next-door neighbor and my dad, and he invented little calculators, the LED calculators, those were his invention. Electronics genius. And I used to go over to his garage, and I think it was because of him that I fell in love with motorcycles. He had an old Indian motorcycle, and I just loved that thing. And so all the songs that are on the album, they really do. They all tell a piece or a story that I relate to in my life.
Yeah, and I want to remind everyone, they can get your album up at DougBriney.com.
Yeah.
You've got a video up on YouTube that I think last I looked had something like well over 300,000 hits on it. But you really don't get any money off these YouTube. It may spread the message that, you know, you're out there and maybe making people interested in your music. But, you know, you need people to actually go and buy the CD in order for you to make ends meet, which is what I'm telling people to do. Go out there, check out the website, DougBriney.com, and buy the CD. If they order it now before the 5th, can they still get it autographed?
They can get it autographed and free shipping through the 5th.
All right, you
so
got to reserve
about one
for
that's about a $5 savings, but just doing the free shipping.
Yeah, well, you got to save one for me. There's another one. I noticed there was like a certain theme where you talked a lot about family and religion and love of country, and that seems to be what the theme that goes through all the songs, because you were talking about Believe, and when I listened to it, I thought of it as a prayer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's it really is kind of a prayer in a sense. It is a prayer. In another sense, it really tells the story of that grounding of a faith and that having that firm foundation. And to me, that's what it's about. It's about this absolute foundation that's there. And it doesn't matter what comes along, I know and I believe it. And that's what I think the song really, really says.
Yeah, well, there is a reason that you've got a strong faith, because you used to have the Cowboy Country Church in Anchorage. Are you looking to start up one down here?
You know, at this point, we're not. We're not. I did. I pastored the Cowboy Church of Anchorage for 5 years there. Prior to that, I pastored the Montana Creek Baptist Church, and then I spent close to 20 years as a music and youth minister, full-time music and youth minister and church. So faith is a huge part of our life, and we, you know, that was a difficult thing for us to leave there. We found a very good church here that we're just real pleased with and have a good relationship with the pastor and a lot of the folks that are in there. We had a great time last night. Had a big event for the community last night at the church, and so we were out late doing that and whatnot. But yeah, it's a part of my life. It's a big part of my life. I got a chance the end of August, beginning of September, to hear Willie Robertson speak live from Duck Dynasty. And I've kind of captured, and I've stolen one of the things that he said in his speech, and because I've always felt this way, I just had never put it into words, and I really liked the way that he put it. He says, for the Robertson clan, their priorities are this: God, family, and ducks, you know, which represents the fun and the hunting and the business. But first and foremost is God and family and then ducks. And for me, it's God, family, and then music or, you know, or whatever. And, you know, everybody has their duck. Everybody has their thing that is, but we have to have those priorities. So, yeah, the album does have a lot of, even though it's not a gospel album, it has a lot of what I call positive message, a very positive feel to it. And that's how I describe my music, is positive country.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, there is one song that you sang that actually had me crying. And, again, it brought me back to thinking about my own father, who I just recently lost. And the song's titled, I Get It.
I Get To.
Oh, I...
Yep.
I...
Yeah, I Get To, yes. Written by Will Nance is the writer of that song, and it's I Get To. Just a phenomenal song, and there again, the personal connection that I have with that song is when my wife and I had our first son 22 years ago, the one that serves in the Air Force, and we had him, we made a commitment to each other that we would never, ever on a Sunday morning say, we have to go to church. Guys, let's get up, get moving, let's go, come on, we have to go to church. As a youth, I sat in the parking lot overlooking at our church. We'd try to get there early so we could see people pulling in and the arguments that people would have in the car, and then, you know, the immediate transformation that they would have whenever they got out of the car. They, you know, everything was fine and smiles and everything else. But, you know, my family, we had arguments on Sunday morning. Come on, we're going to be late. Come on, let's get going. And, you know, as a pastor, as a youth minister, I tell you, I've been to church every time the doors were open and most times when the doors were closed. And my kids have been there every time. And we have never had an argument with our kids about having to get ready on Sunday mornings. We have always been able to say, hey, guys, let's get up. We get to go to church today. And
You know something?
That's the gist of this song.
You know something? Because I think we just mentioned God's name. He brought my internet back up. Let me go play that song so at least people can listen and hear what we're talking about here. It's Doug Barney from his brand new album, Super Country Cowboy. And if this comes, oh, come on, don't do this to me now. Oh, please, can we say a little prayer here?
I'll tell you, Annie, yesterday, I don't have Verizon, but yesterday I have Comcast, and our internet here at the house was out for the better part of the day yesterday. We got it back yesterday afternoon, so I don't know if they're working on something around here or if they're having some kind of technical issue or what.
I don't know, because I get the studio board up. I see the songs, but it's not allowing me to play the songs.
Wow.
No. Actually, it was earlier this week that I had lost internet access and telephone for more than 24. It was like 26 hours. And it came up at moments before I was going on the air. And at that point, I couldn't set up the complete studio, and I had to work it off of my cell phone.
Wow.
It's just not behaving, unfortunately, today. And I apologize.
I wonder if it has anything to do with the storms we had yesterday. I don't know if you all are getting the storms we had yesterday, but that could be a part of it. I don't know.
I think someone's out to get Annie. That's all.
That's it. You never know. You know, I think those little black helicopters are circling overhead. I think I'm on the NSA hit list. I honestly do think about it. Oh, geez. I don't even know how to handle this, honestly, because I just was not prepared for everything to go down on me like this. Because, like I said, it is a fantastic album, Super Country Cowboy, which is on DougBriney.com.
And maybe, Doug, we're just going to have you come back in on again as soon as your album's released and try to do this one more time, because it is a fantastic album, and I really do enjoy it. You know, even the title part, the title song, Super Country Cowboy, I love the guitar in the end of it. I mean, that that just blew me away.
Well, thank you. We have a lot of fun with it, and you know, we're excited about the album. I mean, I'm very excited about it, and very proud of it. I'm very proud of It's All Country and how that went. Don't get me wrong, but I really do think that this is a significant step up, and we really, you know, it makes a big difference having a whole team behind you as opposed to just yourself doing it. And we had an entire team behind us on this project, and I'm so excited to be working with Tate on it.
Well, did you compose any of the music, or was it that, you know, someone already had it composed and you just fiddled around with it?
No, the composition, for the most part, all the composition was done. But what I did is when we sent the music to Tate, how we wanted it recorded, what I did is I played an acoustic version of it with the timing and the breaks, and then I described to them how I wanted the instrumentals to sound, what instruments I wanted to have in there, the kind of the feel that I wanted to have in there, and they just did a fantastic job of capturing that.
Well, that they did, because I loved some of the stuff that they did with it and how it was, and now I'm trying to see if I can pull the studio up on my cell phone, and I get an X-rated spam message. I'm telling you, someone is just definitely out to get me today. I cannot make this up. You know, one of the other songs I loved, and this is something I keep on telling people, because you get these people that go, "Oh, the Twinkies made me do it," or something like that. You have a song called "The Choices You Make," and the second I heard that, I'm going, great argument for God's giving us free will.
Yeah. You know, "The Choices You Make," just, again, a very strong song, I think. Not a religious song, but a very positive message song. It's about personal responsibility. And, you know, the lessons that we learned growing up, and this young man in the song makes a mistake and follows the advice of his friend, gets himself into trouble. And I was down that road as a teenager. I listened to some friends, and I got into some trouble. I never was arrested, but I did get in some trouble. My friends were out playing the next day. They didn't get there. There was no consequences for them, and yet there, you know, I was grounded, and there were some pretty significant consequences for me. And so a lot of who I am is because of the choices that I made, because of the choices, the parenting job that my parents did, and. That's what that song is about. It's we make those choices. The people that we hang out with, they begin to define us, and we are the people we are because of the choices that we make.
That we are, and I'm sure every one of us has done something when we were a kid that, you know, we're going, oh great, and if there weren't consequences, you know, you just didn't grow up right. You know, you ended up you know, doing drugs and jail or whatever. And I also believe, now I've got my studio up on my cell phone, and I'm pulling up your songs, and again, it's not allowing me to play them. So I think it may be a problem with Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I think they've been having some problems again. We've been trying to access my account here, and I'm having trouble doing the same thing, Annie, so it could be just a BTR.
It could be
thing.
Blog Talk Radio, and between my telephone service and Blog Talk Radio, I'm getting a double whammy here.
Wow.
Oh, this is awful.
I wonder if it does have something to do with the storms or something's going on with that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I've got the studio up. I've got your songs listed, but there's no play button on them. And
wow.
I've got it on two computers and my cell phone, and there's no play button on any of them. So I have a funny feeling it's Blog Talk Radio that's got the big problem here.
Now, I don't have any way to. I don't have any way from here to
play
it that it would come through.
Yeah, because everything I've got was, you know, I uploaded onto the studio, because I don't have a hard CD. Otherwise, I'd throw the CD in and shove it underneath the microphone and hope people could hear it. But I can't even do that, Doug. So we definitely have to have you back on, and back on soon, because I feel awful. I mean, this is not the way we wanted it to go, because you've got a fantastic album, and I'm urging everyone to go out and listen to it and to purchase it at DougBriney.com. They're going to love it. I see this a lot of these songs going up the chart, and if Super Country Cowboy does not make number one, then I don't know music.
Well, thank you. That's what we're, you know, we're really praying, and I know we released it. I have a friend here in Nashville that runs a internet radio station called V Radio, and Mick has been playing Super Country Cowboy on there, and it has done very well. The first week it charted at number 38 on his top 40, and the second week we made it to number 14 on his top 40. With the title track there, so it's pretty exciting.
Oh, that should be, because I've been listening to it, because a lot of the other stations here on BTR were playing Super Country Cowboy, and I can't even do that. I wanted to get to play the other songs, because those other songs will absolutely make them want to purchase the album, because, you know, I absolutely loved it. Like I said, I replayed it last night and made little notes on the stuff that I love so much about it. You know, you have one called Eugene Fouquet, and that was a really melancholy song. You know, I was like, oh, man, can't the guy get the girl and, you know, run away? But it was a typical country song, but it spoke about people's prejudices.
You know, it did. And, to me, it's a modern-day Romeo and Juliet story. You know, and it's kind of the modern-day Romeo-Juliet story, and it's the daddy just not being able to control his temper and because wanting something different for his daughter. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. That song was a great song. I fell in love with it when I heard it. It was very different. That one was completely just a work tape. It was really interesting. The authors finished that one. They're actually writers on that song, and when they finished that, Randy Owen from Alabama grabbed it before they never even got a demo made of the song. It was just the work tape, and Randy Owen from Alabama grabbed it up, and they held on to it, and at the last minute decided not to release it and not to record that one. And one of the gentlemen that we were looking at music with says, hey, I've got this, what do you think? Sent it to Michael. Michael said, I think this would be pretty cool. He sent it to me. I said, yeah, we want that one. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun. And that one, a lot of harmonica slide. Just, it kind of has that feel of the Reba McEntire, the Nights of Lights went out in Georgia, kind of a feel to it. But it's a fun song.
You know, it also kind of reminded me a bit of, if you remember, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahassee Bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely remember that. Yeah, I sure do. Yeah, it is. It's very similar in the feel of that.
Well, yeah, it comes back to your constant theme about, you know, family, prayer, God, and everything like that. And you really hit on family importance. When you do the song Pretty Big Deal, I started cracking up when I was listening to the first verse where he's not really big at work in the factory, but once he comes home. And it really hit me super hard last night because, like I said, I recently lost my dad. And yesterday afternoon I received in the mail the eulogy that my brother had read. And while I'm reading it, my husband's in the back room going, and he found something I wrote to my parents for their 50th anniversary, which was 10 years ago, almost exactly to the day he passed away, just right around their 60th anniversary. And I was rereading the eulogy and then reading what I wrote, and it was pretty close together. And then I listened to your song, and your song did the same thing. It's the same thing that we were saying to everyone. In our words, you know, honoring my parents and my father, you said in that song. And again, I'm going to start crying in a split second.
You know, that one is such a fun song to sing live. I absolutely love that song. And of all the songs that are on there, that's my wife's favorite song. That's the one she just goes gaga for that song. She likes that one a lot. And it's a fun song, and it does talk about being a dad and, you know, maybe not having the best job in the world, maybe not having all the money, maybe not being famous or known, but to my kids, I'm a pretty big deal. And because I can do some things, you know, that are pretty big. Killing spiders. I can kill some spiders. We already talked about spiders. I can kill some spiders, you know. I can hit that wiffle ball, and I can do some things. And, you know, I can pull the wagon loaded up with the kids. And you know, my kids are grown at this point now, and I like to ride in the wagon and make them pull me now. But, you know, it really is. It's a song about just that relationship with the kids and those memories that are created as a family.
Yeah, it is important, and that's one of the things that we like to stress, you know, family values. Now, Dana has grown-up children, and I see the way he interacts with his wife and with other people, so I'm sure he was an absolutely fantastic dad to his kids. But that's the thing that kids remember. You know, if the parents are there to spend just a little time with them, you know, the way my mother taught my sister and I how to sew and how to cook and how to tend to different things, the way that she taught us how to garden, the way her father taught us how to do it, the way my father taught us, you know, carpentry, how to build our own soap boxes and so we can do the soapbox derby, the way he taught me electronics and gave me a love for music and reading and playing chess and poker, but the way they interacted with us just made us our lives so much rounder and richer. And I really feel bad.
Yeah,
it is. It makes it so much richer because you then in turn, when you pass this down to your children, they in turn pass it to their children, and it becomes, you know, a tradition and heritage. But today's day and age with these single parent households. With households where the parents just, all right, shove the kids in front of the TV and that's it, give them the video game and they'll be happy. That's not stuff kids are going to remember for the rest of their life. Those are not values they're going to import. And getting that message across is so important.
It really is. And it's, you know, I know some single parents that just do a phenomenal job, you know, spending time with their children and instilling values in them. And I know some married couples that you know, they get home, they turn the TV on, they never interact with the children whatsoever, you know. And so it really, I go back to, like I said, what Willie Robertson said, faith, family, ducks. For me, it's faith, family, and music. And, you know, my faith is paramount. And when that's right, then my relationship with my family can be right. And when my relationship with my family can be right, then I can enjoy my music more. I can enjoy the hobbies that I have and those other things when those things are in the proper perspective. And that's really what we try to encompass with all the songs in this album. Again, not as a religious album, as a pure country album, but positive country.
And that's what it is. We need more positive figures, and you definitely are one of them. Dana, do you have a question? Because I heard you in the background. Sorry.
You know, Doug, you're mentioning about country music, and to me, you know, classic country, going back to when I was growing up, that's one of the things my father gave to me was his love of country music. It had that family value sort of, you know, American traditional values. Is that still alive in Nashville, Doug, or is the industry there changing and going in a different direction?
You know, I think it's very much alive in depending on the artist. I really do. I think it's very much alive. Again, all I can really tell you, we're fairly new to the area, but the people that I have met, the people that I've hung out with, the writers and the musicians that I've had the opportunity to meet with, the songs that I'm singing resonate with them, and I don't think it would resonate if it wasn't alive. You know, I think country music is kind of on this pendulum. We swing real crazy for a while, and we're trying to expand what we're doing, and we're pushing the boundaries, and then we swing back to those very traditional, and, you know, we kind of swing back and forth. And I think right now we're on that, I think the pendulum is swinging back more towards the traditional sound. I think we've pushed the boundaries far enough that on this pendulum swing that I think it's kind of coming back to more of a baseline. Certainly the artists that I have come to know and been hanging out with, that would be true. We've seen a swing. We've gone very pop with our country sound. And I use him as an example, but Jason Aldean with the Red Dirt Anthem and kind of rapping in there. We have country rap now, which is not me. I'm a lousy rapper. I don't think anyone would ever want to hear me sing that. But Jason does a fantastic job of it. Florida Georgia Line, what an awesome group! But they've got such a pop, almost rock sound to them, country. And I think that's that extreme pendulum swing. And I think we're starting to see that thing swing back a little bit, more the traditional and the values there. It's interesting there were so many values in that day, in those early days, and yet there was a lot of songs that had no value, no value is not the right way to say that for sure, but they did not have the moral compass and the moral values either, so there's always been kind of this gulf, but I think when we're talking about this, I think, I look more towards the sound that's there, and I think we're seeing that pendulum swing back a little bit to more traditional sounds.
Are you finding that, people are now no longer afraid to toe that Hollywood line of, ultra-progressivism, but more towards, as you said, traditional family values? People are realizing maybe the harm that's been done to society, that, maybe now the message is more acceptable than it would have been, say, 10 years ago?
No, I don't think so at all. I think, if anything, that the conservative and the very traditional family values and moral values, I think, are frowned upon more than anything else now. I really do. We're losing traditional things every day in our country now. I mean, we can't put the Ten Commandments up in a courthouse. We can't say "In God We Trust," which is our national motto. We can't even say that and post that in public anymore. I think we're losing a lot of that, and I think that's a shame. But at the same time that we're losing those rights and we're losing that part of the value, I think there is a undercurrent that is rejecting that. And I think instead of unifying, I think we're seeing a bigger split in our country. And it goes into the music world as well. It really does. It goes to the music world as well. We have some hardline, dedicated, traditional country artists that, this stuff that they're playing now is not country. Then you have the ones that are really pushing the boundaries and pushing that and who's right, who's wrong? Man, that's not for me to say. I mean, there's always been those that have pushed the boundaries of music. That's part of the evolution of music. But to say that it's unifying us, no, I don't see it. I see a bigger division than anything else. At the same time, I see that pendulum swinging back. I do see there's a growing number of people holding to those traditional values. I think there's a growing number of that, but unifying? No, not unifying.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Actually, does. I'm an optimist, so I always look to see the bright side on things. And unfortunately, that's something no one could ever take away from me. But I'm hoping and I'm praying that we do see a larger movement and momentum. So it's not just a few people holding the lines; it'll be more people just pushing back and saying, "Stop it! Enough is enough." It's freedom of religion, not from religion. It's freedom of speech, not from speech.
Exactly.
You're allowed to speak your mind, and I'm allowed to speak mine. Just understand that whatever you say or do, there's going to be consequences. And then we would come back
to your song, The Choices You Make.
That's right.
You like the way I put that back?
I do. I like that segue. That's good. And you know, and I'm the optimist, too, in the sense that I would hope for that. I hope for that, but I'm not seeing it yet. I just don't – I'm not seeing it happen yet.
It's not happening as fast as we would like. I think it is happening, Doug. It's just one of those things where we're having – you're right, it's a culture war that we're going through right now.
It's a cultural war.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think what we need to do is have more people showing an example. I think that's what maybe we do sometimes. We talk a lot. We pontificate a lot. But what you have to do, as I've encouraged my boys to do, is set an example. Go out and live your life in a way that sets an example for others. That's what we have to do.
That's exactly right. And we need more people that do lead by example as opposed to just talking about it. And, but again, it's where I see that shift back, where I see a shift, and I do see that pendulum swinging that way, I don't see it ever. Unfortunately, I don't see it ever unifying. And I guess that was the word I focused on in that question was the unifying. And I don't see anything unifying us in those ways. I do see a larger number on the conservative side. I see that growing, but as we define ourselves, I see a bigger gap. I see more division than any unification. I see, you know, it's interesting. It's, you know, they, I don't know. I just see more of a division happening than anything. It's so, I mean, you post anything positive and you're going to have, like, people saying you can't do this. You post something here on that side, and then you have the positive people, you know, the people that have my viewpoint more saying, well, you can't do that, you know, and we seem to have this war that's dividing us. And I think we're seeing a swell on the more conservative side, but I don't see it unifying. And I guess that I just focused on that part of the question maybe. I don't know.
Well, Doug, it has been a pleasure. We're down to our last minute and a half, and I'm so sorry we had these technical difficulties. I will be on the phone with BTR to find out what happened, and I'm going to be on the phone with Verizon to find out. They kept on kicking me off. But I'm going to look to see if I can get you and Mike to come back on, hopefully in 1 week. How's that sound?
That sounds fine to me.
And this time I'll triple make sure. I've got a double, triple redundancy, so in case something does go down, I've got a backup system going. But I do apologize. I mean, I really wanted to debut the whole album, let everyone enjoy it. But as I said, at least I got to play that one song, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, and we'll get it going again and be able to do it again. And, you know, I so appreciate you guys and the support. For me as an artist, but I appreciate so much what y'all stand for as a radio station and as a program as well. So let me just say that. I really appreciate you guys, and I appreciate you playing my music.
No, thank you so very much, Doug. And, again, I'll get a hold of you and Mike and try to arrange it for exactly 1 week from today. And the same thing we'll set up, and we'll cross our fingers and say a few prayers.
All right. That sounds good, Annie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Doug. It was Doug Briney. You can find his music at DougBriney.com. And just a quick, before I say goodbye, we've got on Tuesday Nick Drainis. He's with the Goldwater Institute. And then we're going to do a topic on the following Friday, Racism in America, the White